Good morning. So we're in a series called The Voice of the Father that we started last week. And the goal of this series is to introduce four different practices of prayer. Not that you will connect with each and every one every week equally meaningfully. You know, you're not gonna go through every week and wow, that was so great. I learned something about who I am and God, and wow, the next week I learned something, and wow. But that over the 4 weeks of this series, you will discover something that is true of you, that's always been true of you, but you didn't know it to be true of you, and how you interact with, relate to God. And so on your way out the door, through that door, up the steps, on the table that has this card. If you didn't get one last week, it's just each week there's a prayer practice. It's a different sort of like experiential prayer sort of like guide way. And it's three, each one is three easy steps, and there's a verse that goes with it. And this is what we're doing for this series. It's called The Voice of the Father. Last week, we practiced the presence of God. And if you were here, we had a lot of fun. We said that God is always present. He's this word, omnipresent. But his presence is not always created equally. And that if you looked in the Bible, you looked at your life, probably, and definitely in mine, there are moments when God's presence is felt differently than other times. That doesn't mean he's not present in those other moments. It just means we didn't feel him the same way. And we talked about that last week. This week, we're doing this prayer practice called the Examen, E-X-A-M-E-N. And it's this moment at the end of your day where you take stock on your day and how it went and where God was. And, you know, we kind of talk about maybe doing it like, you know, as you put your head down your pillow and you're looking back at your day. You know, what drew you to God or what pushed you away from God is kind of what the prayer practice is for today. Before we get into all of that, though, a while ago, my son took something that wasn't his. And, if you've had kids, you've probably had this experience where we're in our house and we find this thing, this item, and we're like, huh, we don't think this is ours. Where did this come from? We talk to the girls, and like, girls, do you know where this came from? They're like, no, I have no idea. And then we're like, hey, do you know where this came from? And my son's like, yeah, good question. I'm glad you asked it. I've also noticed that thing and thought, I wonder where did it come from? But then I didn't ask the question, but now you have. So thank you for doing that. Let me circle back around and say, good question. I don't know. I'm like, hey, man, where did this come from? Yeah. Where did what come from? What are we talking about? I don't want to have to throat punch you, but I will. Like, I'm willing to. I don't want to punch you in the jugular. I wouldn't. I would think about it. I don't want to have to. You know, and I didn't say that. What I honestly said was, hey, man, like, it's not like this thing where you're going to get in this huge trouble, but if it's not ours, we need to return it. Like, all right, yeah, I took that. Okay, man, well, I just need you to write a letter apologizing, saying that's not your character, it's not who you normally are, saying, you know, it won't happen again, ask forgiveness. Just write the person a letter, we'll mail it back, we'll send it back, and it'll be a done deal. And so he writes the letter, and in the letter, he was harder on himself than I think I would have wanted him to be. You know, talking about the taking it and how what a terrible thing it was. And it struck me that his relationship with his imperfections, like his flaws, like his relationship with the gap between who he wants himself to be and who he is, in that moment at least, was an unhealthy thing. And honestly, like all of us, you know, if we take stock of our lives, what is your relationship with your imperfections? What is your relationship with the gap between who you want yourself to be and who you are? You know, if you take a kid and this kid makes mistakes growing up and their parent says, man, why would you do that? That's I can't believe you did that. And another kid whose parents are like, you shouldn't have done that. I wish you hadn't done that. Let's make some amends, but I will always love you. Like these two people, well, they will physically, chemically, neurologically interact with the gap between who they are and who they want themselves to be differently. Like the hormones their brains release will function, their brains will literally, physiologically function differently if in response to that gap, someone repairs the relationship and restores that feeling of love. Over time, the person's brain actually functions physiologically differently. And maybe in your life, your expectations for yourself, you know, you expected your life to be a certain thing, to go a certain way. There's a guy named Robert Hilliker. He says, shame started as a two-person experience. But as I got older, I learned to do shame all by myself. As in someone at some point shamed them, him, myself, you. But as we got older, we learned to do it all on our own. We learned that we didn't need someone else for us to experience tension and grief and mourning and shame and anxiety and fear and bitterness in response to our imperfections. So there's you see this graph here on the screen. And this graph, what it's going to represent is the bottom line represents time, and the one on the left represents accomplishment. We're going to... There you go. And so you're going to see a line here in a second. And this line is going to be like what we expect our life to look like. Line. There you go. So like we expect like our, like if, you know, maybe this is our financials. And, you know, maybe we thought that when we were younger and we looked at our life, we thought, all right, well, financially, my life is going to go like, I'm going to, you know, make lots of money quickly, and then it's just going to be up and to the right from there. Like, this is what my life is going to look like. Maybe this line represents like your prestige or how people will view you, or this line that third, like, we back up one. Sorry. You're going a little fast for me. Then this one right here, it might represent our relationship status, right? Where, you know, my relationships are always going to be healthy. They're going to start out super healthy, and it's going to get healthier from there. And this line right here is, we thought this is going to be our love life. Like, it's going to be this, like, take off and just stay steady for the rest of our life. Or not, we can just get rid of that one. This is not how love lives work normally in marriage. So anyway, and this one right here, like this is oftentimes what happens in our life where we have this expectation of, I'm going to make this much money, I'm going to have this much prestige, my relationships are going to go this well. And then over the course of our life, sometimes it happens more like this line. And so then what do we do with the gap between those two things? Like what I'm talking about is that space between there, of how we expected our life would go, what we thought the trajectory of our life would be, and perhaps how it's gone. And what do we feel with that gap? You know, one thing we might feel with that gap is, oh my goodness, I love this picture so much. The shirtless, the white pants on the car. I think we call his skin tone tanning bed khaki, I think is what we were the hair, oh my goodness, I love it so much. All right, and it is funny. It's funny, and when I when I was looking for funny Google images, I was like, winner. but this probably belies a large level of brokenness. Right? I mean, the need to prove desirability and successfulness, and I have my stuff together, and in his quiet moments, you know, the effort that has gone into this picture, hours and hours of effort, need to prove that I am desirable and successful. And there are other things we fill this gap with. You know, I was reading an article that was saying that people at specific ages, they have a tendency, even if they've not abused alcohol in their life until now, there are specific ages in people's lives where they will look at their life and say, man, I'm not where I thought I was going to be. And there's this temptation to fall into alcoholism. Or with some people fill it with food. This is one that, like, is generally okay. Like, the other things are clearly abusive and we get really judgmental about. But if someone abuses food, then we kind of just make space for it. But it comes from the same place. Or seeking an affair, seeking something, relationship, even emotionally, outside of where you currently are. Like, this is oftentimes a response to experiencing that gap between where I thought I would be and where I actually am. There's this guy in the Bible named Paul who wrote several of the books. And in Romans 7:15, he's this guy who's oftentimes confident and brash, and he's this stone-cold leader. But in Romans 7:15, he says this. He says, I don't really understand myself, for I want to do what is right, but I don't do it. Instead, I do what I hate. And so this guy who oftentimes is this confident and brash leader type, He feels sort of so introspectively shameful. Like he's missed opportunities in his own life. Like his relationship with his own imperfections is getting the better of him in the moment. So we turn life into this pass-fail test. Either I've met my expectations and I pass, and I move the goalpost to new expectations and I have to meet those, and that's pass-fail. Or if I don't meet an expectation, I just, it's fail. I failed, and then what do we do with that? What's our relationship with that? Like, how do we respond to that? And you mix in with that how we view God. And this becomes like chicken and the egg, right? Because, is God looking at us and severely disappointed and mad at us for our imperfections? And if you feel that way, then it probably creates more shame and tension and bitterness and anger. Or maybe if you're someone who has a tendency towards these things, you'll see God that way. Like one author says that God created us in his image and we return the favor. There's this style of prison. There's this architectural design called a panopticon, which is a round prison. And as you look inside the panopticon, what you'll see is that there's this kind of like tower in the middle that guards can see out of, but prisoners can't see inside of from the outside. And at every moment, one guard can see every prisoner at all times, but the prisoners don't know where that guard is looking. And in the 1700s, a guy named Foucault, a philosopher, said that this is oftentimes how we view God. See, what happens in this prison is prisoners will self-police because they don't know when they're being watched, but they assume they're being watched, and they assume the prison guard is ready to punish them if they fight or get out of line or act up. And so they just kind of like live with this self-policing fear at all times that the guard is probably watching. They can't see the guard. They know when the guard is watching, but they assume the guard is watching and displeased. And so you need less guards because the prisoners basically police themselves. And Foucault's his point was that oftentimes we view God this way. We don't know when God is watching. We assume God is always watching, and he's generally displeased with us. And if we step out of line, we should be afraid because he's going to smack us back into line. And then how does that sort of relationship and understanding of God interact with how we view our imperfections? Does it push our imperfections even further into an unhealthy place? Growing up, I went to a church that framed faith in a similar way to this panopticon concept of God, that he is waiting to smack you back in line. He will smite you with his all righteous smiting, right? He is like a child with a magnifying glass burning ants if you get out of line. And as a child who hears messages like this, you're just kind of like, whoa, this God dude sounds super uncool. Like, I'm super terrified of that. He's always watching, and if I step out of line, he will get me. That sounds very boogeyman-esque. So you mix that in with how we view our imperfections. But I'm here to tell you today that if we viewed our imperfections the way that God sees them, it would change the way we interact with them. See, God he's not pleased with our imperfections. He's not like, yes, you're imperfect, but that's okay. Like, your imperfections are fine. He's not saying that. But he sees them openly and honestly. Like, God accepts you as you are, but has no intention of leaving you that way. It's not, this is who you are, you're so flawed, I can't believe, like, you're so terrible. It's like, yes, he sees our imperfections, and he comes alongside and encourages us to change and correct those imperfections. But it's not from this place of judgment and wants to smite. It's from this place of he loves and wants relationship. So that's my first point, is that God corrects us because he loves us. Hebrews 12, 5a through 6 says this way. My child, don't make light of the Lord's discipline, and don't give up when he corrects you. For the Lord disciplines those he loves, and he punishes each one he accepts as his child. And it's like when my son took that thing without asking a while ago, the loving thing for me to do is to say, hey man, not okay. Let's write that letter. But I love you so much. It doesn't impact my relationship with you at all. Like, I still love you so much. I'm still so proud of you. I'm proud of you not because you took this, but because of who you are. Like, this is not who you are. And I'm just so proud of that person. Did I correct him? Yes. But was it from a place of love? Yes. It was because I wanted him to be this sort of happy, healthy, whole person, and I love him and wants what's best for him. So I had to come alongside and gently correct him. This is what he's saying. It's like this love of the Father. It's this, and even in that moment, like, I feel like we handled it okay, but there are moments I correct my son in anger or in response that's not perfect, and that's never the way God is. God is always the perfect, patient, gracious, loving Father. There's this sort of urban legend history that's been passed down since biblical times of how a shepherd handles a sheep that wanders off. See, if a sheep wanders off regularly, they go astray if they run where they shouldn't, you know, and he calls the sheep, and one is continuing to go this way, and the rest are going this way. You know how he handles that. And honestly, the shepherd metaphor is one that's all throughout the Bible. You know, the Bible says, my sheep hear my voice and they know me. And it's talking about Jesus and those who follow him. And the idea is that what happens is the shepherd will leave these sheep and go grab that one. And then he will bind the legs of that sheep. And he will wrap the sheep on his shoulders, as you see here. And actually, this, you can see there's like rope bound around that sheep's legs. And when I put my 5-year-old on my shoulders for like 5 minutes, my neck starts to hurt. You know, it's like, oh my goodness gracious, wouldn't you become so big, right? But I can't imagine carrying a sheep around all day, how sore my shoulders and arms and neck would be. And if that sheep has to go to the bathroom, I just assume, well, his clothes smell worse than normal those days, because he's carrying this sheep around. But what happens over time is this sheep, as the shepherd is talking and leading the other 99 sheep, or however many sheep he has, like, he's like, hey, sheep, come on, come on, come on. And they follow him. And actually, you can go on YouTube and watch videos of shepherds like giving his words to other people and say, all right, to my sheep, say, tut, 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 and they'll come running. And so someone comes up to the sheep and they're like, tut, tut, tut. And the sheep don't even move. They're still like, you know, like eating their grass. And then someone else tries and goes, tut, tut, tut. And the sheep are still eating grass. And the shepherd comes up and the shepherd goes, tut, tut, tut. And the sheep are like, they run off to the shepherd. And what happens over time is as the shepherd is carrying the sheep, like the sheep learns to the shepherd's voice. And you know, this sheep during this time, his legs are bound and he's separate from the shepherd and he has no freedom. His only life experience at that time is whatever the shepherd allows because his feet are tied. And maybe the sheep feels like, you know, some kind of way about having his legs tied. But over that time, he learns the shepherd's voice. And then when the shepherd calls, he comes and his life is safer, healthier, happier because of it. The shepherd does that because he cares for the sheep. He loves that sheep. He also wants that relationship with that sheep. He wants that sheep to know his voice and to come running when he calls. And so the second reason why God corrects is because he wants a relationship with you. Slide. It's okay, we'll skip it. Isaiah 55:3a says it this way. Come to me with your ears wide open. Listen and you will find life. Is this how we approach God? Do we approach God talking or listening? And this series is about the voice of the Father, hearing the voice of our God the Father and responding to it in new and fresh ways. Come to me with ears wide open. Listen and you will find life. There's this passage in 1 Corinthians 11, 26 through 28 that talks about this. It talks about the elements. It's him Paul giving instructions to the church at Corinth about how to approach communion. And I'm going to read through the entire thing, 26 through 30, and I'm going to come back to the beginning because this really kind of seems like this eye in the sky that it's ready to smite. For every time you eat this bread and drink this cup, you are announcing the Lord's death until he comes again. So anyone who eats this bread or drinks this cup of the Lord unworthily is guilty of sinning against the body and the blood of the Lord. That is why you should examine yourself before eating the bread and drinking the cup. For if you eat the bread or drink the cup without honoring the body of Christ, you are eating and drinking God's judgment upon yourself. It's starting to feel heavy and foreboding. That is why many of you are weak and sick, and some have even died. He's like, whoa, hold on here. The worship leader at Harbor never said that to me. If I approach this wrong, God might smite me to death that week. Whoo, it just got real. Okay. And he's like, examine yourself. And I had this communicate to me as a child, like, all right, if you take this and you take it and you not measured up some sort of arbitrary line of acceptableness, then God might be coming for you and it might not go well with you. And I remember as a child hearing that and like, well, I'm not eating that cracker then. No, that cracker is not for me. I'm not about that life. Let's go back to verse 26. For every time you eat this bread and drink this cup, you are announcing the Lord's death until he comes again. What he's saying is this right here, this is a reminder of the relationship you have with Jesus and the work Jesus did on the cross. He says, you're announcing this. You are taking this and that relationship and that work upon yourself. You see, the work of Jesus, this idea of this pass-fail life, and like, if we don't measure up, then we fail. But if we measure up, we pass. Like the work of Jesus says that doesn't exist. That's not actually how we function. And the work of Jesus says that we didn't pass. We failed. We've done wrong. To be in a relationship with God, someone has to come perfect. We did not measure up. But the work of Jesus says we do through him. It's this idea of like, when you take this on, like, you're announcing that. He's saying, take this on. It's this reminder of your relationship with the work of Jesus. And go to verse 28 for a second. 28. That is why you should examine yourself before eating the bread and drinking the cup. See, what happens when we examine our lives? Like so often when we have imperfections, when we make mistakes, when there are things that we shouldn't do, but we do, and we don't understand why we do them, but we do them anyway, like we don't admit them to ourselves, let alone somebody else. But Paul's saying, no. Step back from your life. Actually, honestly examine your life. The good, the bad, the ugly, the mistakes, the things you did for him, the things you did that pushed you away from him. And in so doing, when you honestly look at your life and the mistakes and the imperfections, it's not, I'm so bad. I'm so terrible. I'll never measure up. I should be so ashamed and bitter. It's the work of Jesus was so great that we get to look at that and not feel shame, not feel destruction, not feel this lack of measuring up. It's not examine yourself and so that you know that you don't measure up. It's examine yourself. Honestly, openly. And in so doing, you will lean into your relationship to Jesus so much more because you're imperfect. And he takes that. And there's that thing over there that you wish you didn't do, but you do. He takes that. And there's that habit, that destructive thing, and he takes that. And there's this thing over here. It's the way you talk to people. And yeah, he sees that and he takes that. It's not you don't measure up. And if you, it's examine yourself. Take this, and it will cause you to lean into your relationship to Jesus so much more. He corrects us. He asks us to be honest about our imperfections because he wants you to lean into your relationship with him. So this prayer practice we have, this examine prayer, it is that. It is trying to step back from our day and look at our day, our imperfections, our choices, and not with this place of shame and bitterness and anger and frustration and self-defeat, but rather openly and honestly in giving it to God. You know, if this card, if you have one from last week, you can, or if you don't, you can pick one up on your way out. It's the daily examine. It's number one, at the end of your day, look back at where God showed up. Oftentimes in our day, like we're so busy, God's moving on our behalf, he's blessing us, and we don't even see it because we're so busy. And stop. Maybe it's when you go to bed at night, before you fall asleep, just in bed for a moment. Man, God, where were you? Where did you show up for me that I was too busy to even notice? Step two, focus on what drew you to him and what pushed him away. Because honestly, like if unless that's our motivation, if it's measuring up in some way or gold stars in heaven or, you know, trying to sort of, I don't know, like prove our worth, it'll always be this cycle of I didn't measure up. It's pass, fail, and I failed, pass, fail, and I failed, pass, fail, and I failed. But this is a different altogether motive. It's not, I have to measure up, I have to prove myself. It's, I want to be in this relationship with God that's meaningful, and these things push me from him, and so I want to get past that. It reframes our imperfections. It frames and reconfigures our relationship to our imperfections more in alignment with God's relationship to our imperfections. And ask him for clarity on how to use today's truths tomorrow. Three steps. At the end of the day, look back at where God was, focus on what drew you to him and what pushed him away, and ask him for clarity on how to use today's truth tomorrow. This is the prayer practice for this week, and I hope that you engage with it. I've been engaging with our prayer practices a week ahead of you all, just because I want to, you know, walk in it and experience it so that this time can be meaningful and true. Like, I want to quite literally practice what I preach, you know? So I have been doing these practices a week ahead of you all before we talk about it with you. And so this week, my wife doesn't know I'm going to tell the story, but it paints me in a bad light, not her, so it should be fine. So the other day, I think it was Tuesday. It was like a busy day, and mentally taxing. And I got home, and my wife's like, "Hey, I need to take our son to this thing, so you make dinner." Got it? Okay, I'll make dinner, and she leaves. And then later on, it's like, "Okay, I gotta go get him. Could you clean up dinner? And we have people coming over in a little bit for premarital counseling, so get ready for that too." Got it. So I'll clean up, and I'll get ready for that. And then we had people come over, ironically, premarital counseling, which will make more sense later. And so we did like premarital counseling with them for like, because it's these lovely young couple and they're engaged and we're just talking about how to be prepared for marriage. And so we were with them for like 2 hours or so, 2.5 hours. And then it was like 9:30, they're leaving. I've had like a long day. I'm sitting on the couch. It's the first time all day that I have like a moment to myself. I'm just like watching a stupid show on ESPN. I'm watching it. And this is also simultaneously the first time my wife had a chance to talk to me in my day. And so she sits down and is talking to me. And I'm like sitting watching. So I pause it. And she's sitting talking to me. And I turn to her. And she's done talking. And I turn back and I push play. And then she talks to me again. So I pause it. My turn. And she gets done talking, and so I turn back and I push play. and she starts talking to me again, and I pause it. I'm like, "Honey, I'm out of words on today. Like, I don't, there are no more words. I am putting every flag up possible that my words have all been spent on my day. No more words." And so she continues talking to me. And she talks, and I turn back to the TV, and I push play, and she's like, "All right, well, good night then." And so, like, later on, like, you know, like an hour or two later, I'm like, "All right, let's get this practice in so that I can be honest about it on Sunday." Oh, farts. All right, I'm going to have to apologize for that one tomorrow. And then the next day, it was like stressful and there's stuff happening and it's busy. And it was like this little window. I was like, "Hey, that happened and I'm sorry." But you know what? Brene Brown, I'm going to get it right. She says this about shame and our mistakes. "Shame thrives in secrecy, silence, and judgment. That when we've done something and when it stays secret and when it stays silent, And when it stays in this space, we assume people will judge us. It gets bigger and bigger and stronger and takes over more and more of our life. But the examine prayer, what it does is it takes this thing that could be secret, could be silent, could be judgment, and it removes it from secret, silencing, and judgment, and it puts it into the light, and it takes the power from it, and we get to own it and give it to Jesus and move past it. So I invite you this week to follow those three steps. At the end of your day, look back at where God showed up. Focus on what drew you to him and what pushed him away, and ask him for clarity on how to use today's truth tomorrow. Let's close in prayer. God, I'm so thankful that you view our imperfections differently than we view our imperfections oftentimes. That you don't see it as this thing that defines us, and sometimes we do. And this gap between who we want ourselves to be and who we are, this isn't a gap that defines us. We are defined by you. We are defined by your love. And the more that we are in relationship with you, the more that we acknowledge our imperfections and give those over to you, the closer we will, the more power we give your work in our life. And that we are denying the power of the cross if we keep these things in the dark. And we're denying the power of the cross if we live lives marked by bitterness and anger and shame because of that gap between our expectations and who we are. We give our imperfections so much power over our life when we keep them secret and silent and we assume judgment. So give us the wisdom and the strength to view our imperfections the way you do, to have a relationship with them like you do. You're not okay with them, but we're honest about them. And remind us, God, and you know, as we put our head on our pillow this week, to try this examine prayer. Just it's a completely different motive than we would normally have. It's not, I don't measure up, I'm not good enough, I'm a screw up. It's what pulled me closer to God, what pushed him away. Man, this thing, it pushed me closer to God. Thank you. This part of my day today pushed you away. Let me do better tomorrow. It reframes it. It changes it. It aligns us with how you view us. So we love you. And we thank you. In your name, amen.